one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, James Earl Jones is going to be a part of the thread of next hour's discussion. Because we're going to talk baseball movies. How would you like to be able to say, "You're killing me, Smalls," to the guy who played Smalls, Scotty Smalls? I'm going to tell you how you can get that chance. But for now, welcome back to Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We suck so you don't have to hear me and Robbie Triano. Going to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois and welcoming to the show, Paul Caputo, host of Baseball by Design. It's a podcast. It explores the origin stories for minor league nicknames, and I love this. Paul, welcome to the show.
Steve, thanks so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
I love the idea of what you'd said in the Athletic article about minor league teams, that you can tell the story of America by understanding why minor league baseball teams have the names that they have. It's like stitching together America through minor league baseball teams. What did you mean by that? And give us some examples.
I feel like minor league baseball is the absolute best at tying into just some like hyper local connection to the community. And, you know, very often it's nature. It's an animal. It's a culture. It's very often industry. And these team names, they often sound like there's just like, they just went and they pulled two names out of the dictionary. And, you know, it's just the silliest thing that you could possibly find, right? Like, and so an example of this is the Hartford Yard Goats, right? Like, they're a team in Hartford, Connecticut. Their logo is a goat with a bat in its mouth. And people are just like, yeah, yard goat, like whatever. It's just this completely random, silly thing. Well, if you look at Hartford, Connecticut, it's right on a very important rail line. And the railroad industry is huge to Hartford, Connecticut. The whole reason the town exists is because of the railroad industry. And a yard goat is a nickname for a locomotive switcher that you would find there in Hartford at this, you know, at the railroad. And so, you know, the yard goat is a nickname for something from the railroad industry. They took it. They made it something fun. They made it an actual, you know, goat that, you know, has been one of the most fun logos in minor league baseball there. Seems silly on the surface, seems like they just pulled a name out of a hat, and it actually is this really funny sort of meaningful thing. And, you know, I got into this when I will say right up front here, I know I'm on the air in Chicago here. I'm a Phillies fan, lifelong Phillies fan, grew up in that area. When their AAA affiliate, when the Phillies AAA affiliate came to Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, Allentown, Pennsylvania, and they were called the Iron Pigs. And I was just like, well, what the heck of that, right? Like, I was just like, well, it's just like a metallic pig. Well, it's not a complicated story, but it's they're named for the pig iron that's forged in the steel mills of eastern Pennsylvania. And so there are just so many teams like that, and especially in minor league baseball, I think more than any other sport, certainly more than major league baseball, right? Like, I mean, the, you know, Tigers in Detroit and trolley dodging in Los Angeles. I mean, that stuff is, you know, the major league teams, I think, just don't do nearly as good a job of tying into the local community, whether it's the nature, you know, that or the culture or the industry. You know, they're not too far from where you are. You've got the Independent Joliet Slammers that are named for, you know, the very famous prison that exists there in Joliet. And so every one of these minor league, most of these minor league teams, I should say, really have an awesome local connection. And, you know, I've mentioned a couple of sort of industry terms here, but like the nature, right? Like, they're named for rivers and animals. The Tacoma Rainiers are named for a beautiful mountain and a mediocre beer. The El Paso Chihuahuas are actually named for the desert out there. The Daytona Tortugas have this awesome sea turtle logo. So it's just, I mean, just like, there's 120 affiliated minor league teams. 110 of them have unique nicknames. Many of them, you know, used to be named for their parent clubs. Fewer of them are now, including two for the Cubs, by the way. The Iowa Cubs and the South Bend Cubs are holdouts there, being named for their parent clubs. But that's what I meant. Like when you take in total these minor league teams and the nicknames that they have, the stories they tell about the local places, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies in New York are named for the fact that Binghamton, New York is the carousel capital of the world. Something I never would have known if I had not gotten into telling the stories that, that minor league baseball logos and nicknames tell.
Rumble Ponies? That's what
the Rumble Ponies.
Is that what with the carousels going up and down? That's what they call. Is that an industry term in the carousel industry?
Well, you know, a lot of times these teams will come up with nicknames for things that exist in their town. I mean, like if you look in Amarillo, Texas, they're named after prairie dogs.
Yes,
their nickname
I talking about that earlier. Sod poodles, which is a spectacular description.
Right, exactly. So I don't know if anyone has ever called the horses that exist on a carousel a rumble pony, but rumble ponies comes from the fact that, you know, they've got these sort of wooden horses on these carousels, and their logo is like a wooden horse, basically, but a sort of badass wooden horse.
My guest is Paul Caputo. He is the host of Baseball by Design, a podcast that explores the origin stories for minor league nicknames. That's what we're doing. And by the way, in Chicago, not just the Joliet Slammers, but more recently, the Chicago Dogs.
Right.
They play in Rosemont, the Chicago Hot Dog, and there is no ketchup on the uniform. That's that's the rule.
But that is the rule.
Our fascination here on Saturday Suckage with minor league teams and names began with the Trash Pandas of Rocket City. And it was at a time where we thought, oh, I loved it. It's this flying raccoon and this Trash Panda's flying. He's got a shield. He looks strong and muscular. And we were going to buy we bought the shirts and our producer hates real raccoons. He grew up in a family where the dad stands in the second floor, opens a bedroom window, and shoots them.
Right.
That's what he does with a real thing. So he got real angry, so he became Trash Panda. So all of this grew out of the – when baseball – it happened at a time when baseball was resizing the minor leagues. Like the Florence Yalls became the Yalls – because that's what the water tower said. Howdy, y'all. So is that a good defining point to this? And what else did you see change about this? The branding? I mean, it must have been the merch. Oh, number one rule in life, follow the money. So what were all the moving parts in this that got us these wonderful, silly, enjoyable names that should be associated with fun and games?
Absolutely. So I think that this era that we are in right now of wacky minor league baseball logos and nicknames really started in like the mid 2000s. And, you know, you can look back a little bit, like, you know, MASH was famous for featuring, you know, Max Klinger was a fan of the Toledo Mud Hens, you know, also sort of mid 90s issue had like the Carolina Mudcats who they sold ads. They sold baseball caps by taking an ad out in Baseball America, right? Like, I mean, before you were ordering things online, you were, you could buy minor league baseball caps through, you know, Baseball America. And so, you know, there were teams like the Montgomery Biscuits, maybe the Lansing Lugnuts, right? Like there were a couple of teams that really sort of started dipping their toes into the water of being just a little bit silly and seeing how it went. And I think that, you know, it really did, I think, take off around then. It was these franchises realized, hey, we don't have to be named for our parent club. We can actually market the fan experience. I mean, one of the things about affiliated minor league baseball is it's very hard to put a competitive field on the team and make that the thing that you're marketing. Because, you know, obviously, as every baseball fan knows, as soon as a player starts playing well, they get called up. And so you're not marketing, hey, we're going to win. We're going to go out there and win the championship. You're marketing the fun activities between innings. You're marketing this sort of fun branding. And, you know, these franchise started having real value when they bought into that. And they said, oh, well, we're going to have wacky nicknames. We're going to have really fun, sort of silly nicknames that are going to bring people to the field because they want to, you know, represent these sort of fun teams. The Akron Rubber Ducks, right? Like they're called the Rubber Ducks because Akron, Ohio is the rubber capital of the world, the tire capital of the world, basically. The Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp are named for the seafood industry. The Las Vegas 51s are another one from that sort of like early, you know, the early part of this wacky era in the early 2000s. They were named for the fact that Area 51 is not that far away. And they had this like alien head logo. Another one that I think is almost the sort of pinnacle of the wackiness before the trash pandas maybe was one called the New Orleans Baby Cakes. And they were only around for 3 years. And they had this like creepy Mardi Gras baby, you know, like the plastic baby Jesus that you find in the king cakes for Mardi Gras. They were only around 3 years, right? But that was like the height of this wackiness. The trash pandas are super interesting. And I actually had a really fun conversation with a guy who was basically in charge of the Marshall Space Flight Center's, get us to the moon in 2025 program on the podcast. I actually talked to him about what would it take to put a raccoon in a trash can and get it into outer space? And so we had fun on that episode.
What would it take?
He said they're working on it. He says it would take a lot of hard work to. Although, in fairness to your producer there, maybe the idea of whether getting it back is the real problem. I don't know. So if we're launching raccoons into space, maybe your producer would be okay with that there. But what I was going to say about the trash band is that's really interesting, and the tie that you made to COVID when they canceled the 2020 season. The Rocket City Trash Pandas sold $4 million worth of gear before they played a single game, because they launched in 2019 before the 2020 season, canceled the 2020 season, and by the time they took the field in 2021, they had sold $4 million worth of gear.
And some of that was to us, because we bought t-shirts and included Nancy Armour, columnist for USA Today, a friend and a former colleague, and we had her on the show. And while I said I brought this up, the Rocket City Trash Panda, she goes, oh. She's looking up the merch online. Oh, yeah, I'm in. Take all my money. Take all my money. So let me ask you, since we're stitching together America, my guest is Paul Caputo. Yeah. He is the host of the podcast Baseball by Design. We're talking about the minor league teams and having fun with the names. Okay, explain the local, the territoriality of the sock puppets.
So the Burlington Sock Puppets, this is a logo that got a lot of recognition, won a lot of awards, designed by a guy named Dan Simon, who also created the Savannah Bananas logo. Also, if we're talking about that article from The Athletic, he created the Dairy Daddies logo. Mm-hmm. They have, it's interesting the number of teams that are named after basically the textile industry. And the town of Burlington is famous for, as you know, it's famous for its socks, Burlington socks, right? And so they decided they were going to tie into that sort of textile history there in very much the same way that the White Sox affiliate, the Kannapolis Cannonballers, that name actually ties back to the textile industry. And I can talk about that in a second if you'd like. But there was another team, the Lowell Spinners in Lowell, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But the sock puppets, which is a hugely fun nickname, right? Like it's such a great story. They basically wanted to tie into this, to the textile history, the industry there, and to the fact that Burlington, the town of Burlington, is famous for its socks. And so they became the sock puppets, kind of a fun, silly, logo based on sock puppets that absolutely took off and, got a lot of recognition for a minor league baseball team. Like you say, you follow the money, right? These teams will put out these fun logos that have a direct connection to the town, but they very often get national attention or even international attention. And this very low level team sold an absolute ton of merchandise all over the country. And these teams will put out maps. They say, hey, we've sold to 46 of the 50 states. And, we just have these other ones to go. Sock puppets were one of those, right? They sold a ton of merchandise all over the country to people who will never go to a Burlington Sock Puppets game.
The article in The Athletic also mentioned that 100 years ago or 120 years ago, 140 years ago, there was a Pensacola team named the Dudes. That might be altogether different now, but I just love the whole idea of the Dudes. Or yeah. If they do, Latin appreciation, they could be Los Dudes. I love that whole thing. How can we get back to the Dudes? Maybe, or is Can we not get the rights to Spicoli? He seems like the dude who would be there. But can the Pensacola dudes tell me what's their history and how do we get them back?
So I will admit that I do not know the specific history of the Pensacola dudes. That team right now in Pensacola is the Blue Wahoos. A lot of these teams, unlike the Gulf of Mexico, are named for the seafood industry, the fishing industry there. So they're the Blue Wahoos right now. I will say that a lot of these teams do throwback nights. I mean, one of the fun things about this is we're talking about mostly primary identities. Most of these minor league teams will have 3, 4, 5 identities over the course of the season. And so for the team in Pensacola to be the dudes would be, you know, certainly something that they could do for like a weekend or something like that. In very much way, like the Cedar Rapids Colonels, they played as the Rabbits, for the game at the cornfield there, for the Field of Dreams game. So, you know, these teams absolutely could do that. One of the things about these names from the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s is that they were often not the teams that came up with them, but the local reporters, the local media would name teams. And, you know, there's a team that's still out there now called the Asheville Tourists that plays in Asheville, North Carolina. And that name Tourists came from the media. And, you know, it ties back to the fact that this was a team that didn't really have a home field for a little bit and that these players were sort of not from the local area. And the journalists started calling them the Tourists. So I don't know what was happening in Pensacola that the guys who made up that team were called the dudes by the local media, but certainly sounds like a fun research project.
It sounds like they were surfing. That's what they were doing. Dude, the size of the wave, dude. And guess what? Asheville Tourists is, that's good writing, Dickie. That's what it comes from. It comes from Slapshot. That's good writing, Dick. I tried to capture the spirit of the thing. Oh, you did. You did. And the idea that Asheville would have that because it is very touristy, not just the players, but, and it's so weird. Asheville, Austin are among the weirdest, most wonderful, creative places. I love that. I hadn't realized that the Asheville Tourists, but in embracing this idea and appealing to kids, explain the Carolina Disco Turkeys. I haven't seen the logo. Is one of them, is they wearing a white suit the way John Travolta did?
So the Disco Turkey is a nickname. So it's a, you know, along the lines of sod poodles for prairie dogs. Disco Turkey is a nickname for peacocks. And the branding for this team. So this is one where there is not necessarily a real strong connection to the local community. This is one where they sort of went wacky for wacky's sake. And speaking of alternate identities, they are going to be playing this season as the Yacht Rockers and also the Camel City Humps, because the RJ Reynolds cigarette company is there and the, you know, Camel brand cigarettes. So they're tying into that history there. But the
what does that hat logo look like?
It is literally humps? It's literally a camel dromedary with one single hump. he's not smoking, but he is on a pitcher's mound throwing a ball. But the you know, the Disco Turkeys very much buy into the whole sort of 70s thing. It's very much like their peacock is, you know, calling his shot Babe Ruth style. But he is also, you know, wearing the bell bottom pants and the disco outfit. And, you know, the team's uniforms are also like throwbacks to the 70s, right? Like they do a lot of the powder blues and the pinstripings on the, you know, down the sleeves. And they're just, for whatever reason, they just decided that they were going to buy in entirely in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. They were going to buy in entirely to this whole like sort of 70s ethos. I don't know what the connection is between the 70s and Winston-Salem where they play, but it is it is a fun logo. A guy named Britton Peck, who is an illustrator, he's not one of the big designers who does a lot of the brands in minor league baseball. It's his work, and he's just sort of local with in the community there, and did that brand for him. It's a really fun one. If I may interject with another Winston-Salem, because there's another team there, I believe a White Sox affiliate, in fact, the Winston-Salem Dash. They are named for the piece of punctuation between Winston and Salem. They are the Winston-Salem Dash.
I never knew that. I'm trying to forget all things White Sox because they're the worst team in baseball. They suck. But suddenly they become interesting because they're named for the dash between Winston and Salem.
Yeah. Now, if there are any grammar nerds out there who are, you know, screaming at the radio, it's because that piece of punctuation is not actually a dash. And so it's a hyphen. So their logo is, or was anyway, it was a like a baseball, like dashing. And they were trying to do the whole double entendre. And they're like, ah, dash, hyphen, same thing. And they actually got a lot of pushback on the fact that Winston and Salem are conjoined by a hyphen, not a dash. And so they, of course, as one of their alternate identities, just recently, last year or two, they played as the Winston-Salem hyphens. So that's where that name comes from. They really did for just for a weekend.
You know what's so interesting about the White Sox? It has nothing to do with the major leagues because they're just a fraud. So before I let you go, I want to bring you back to where I came in on this whole discussion about 45 minutes ago. I'm talking with Paul Caputo. He is the host, creator of Baseball by Design podcast, talking about minor leagues, the origin of minor league baseball, is the way you can stitch together America through this. Last night, I'm now one day old, having learned of a name even greater, and somewhat, I thought at first it was questionable, made me uncomfortable, as I was told by a woman wearing a Trash Panda shirt that there's a team in San Antonio with now an alternate identity called the Chonklas, the Flying Chonklas. I did not know what it was, and she said, yeah, that's, and thank you, texters. Yeah, the words I couldn't come up with, the phrase I couldn't come up with was flip-flops. But it's a flying flip-flop hitting like a skull, hitting the forehead. It's what grandma threw at the kids. And I felt uncomfortable about this. You can either make me feel better or give me whatever. What are your thoughts on the Flying Chonklas? Because I love that logo and that name.
It's a great logo. It's a great name. A really fun identity for this team. Of the 120 affiliated minor league baseball teams, roughly 95, that number is not exact, but it's somewhere around 95 of them participate in a program that's been going on for a few years called the Copa de la Diversión, which I apologize for my bad Spanish there, but it basically means the Fun Cup. And it is in Spanish, and it basically is a program where these teams will rebrand with Spanish language identities in an attempt to reach out to Spanish speaking fans in these various communities. And so, you know, some of them are very specific and very serious. Some of them are, you know, tied to, you know, cultures and stories. And, you know, they're really beautiful, amazing logos, and the teams that do it well, and most of them do, will work with the local Spanish-speaking communities where they play, and they will cultivate a really great logo that is specific to the team, specific to the region, and specific to the communities that are represented where they play. The Flying Chonklas, and this has been very well received by the Spanish-speaking fans in San Antonio, is basically, you know, tying into this sort of fun story of grandmothers that will throw flip-flops as a form of like punishment or getting attention, or, you know, they basically,
hey,
like,
you know,
if kids are misbehaving, they will throw a flip-flop at their at whoever's misbehaving, their kid, their grandkids or whatever. It's tied specifically to grandmothers is my understanding, but you know, it's such a fun logo, and is one that what you're doing right here is exactly what they want with this program and with all of minor league baseball logos, is to look at it and say, what the heck, right? Like, what is that story? And, you know, to come back to your Trash Pandas, what does a raccoon flying into space have to do with Madison, Alabama? And it's, you know, obviously because NASA is there with the Madison Space Flight Center or the Marshall Space Flight Center. Engineers are supposed to be clever. Raccoons are clever. That's how come it's a raccoon. Trash Panda, because that's a nickname for raccoons. All these stories, all these things that you can tie to the local community. And it just is the thing that makes minor league baseball the absolute best when it comes to logos and nicknames and telling stories of our country.
And here's one that is exactly follow the money. A 708 texter says the Windy City Thunderbolts will play select games as the Windy City Sliders. Wearing White Castle-themed uniforms, fans get Coupons to White Castle. That's exactly follow the money. That's where we go. Paul, I've had a wonderful time. I'm sorry. I find a way. I will gin up a reason to revisit this with you. I've enjoyed it. I think our audience has too. Thank you very much.
Steve, thank you. I've had a blast.
Thank you very much. Paul Caputo, Baseball by Design, the podcast, and you can get more of him. You don't have to get more of me. You can get more of him, and I love that. I hope you did too. The naming of minor league teams, they're having fun. It should be fun. And that's what minor league teams do. They have fun with it this way. Okay, now we're done having fun because we're going to talk about the White Sox. There will be no more fun. They were fun. The Winston-Salem dash, which is not really a dash, it's a hype, and all of the word nerds got upset about that. What we're going to get upset about next is the people, the interim GM and the managerial fraud and the fact that your manager is Southside's from Mike Quatty. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
White Sox! White Sox!
So White Sox.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Nice, Robbie Triano. Saturday Suckage, I'm Steve Rosenberg. Welcome in, welcome back. It's Memorial Day weekend. Be smart. Now, I got to tell you, everybody went to the airport. TSA frisked like 3 million people. And the city should be empty, but what's left, you should know, are all the schmuck drivers. It's dangerous out there. Stay home or be very careful. Drive a tank. I'm just telling you, just getting down here was like they're playing motorized pachinko. Stop it. Have a safe Memorial Day. And thank you for those in the service. Thank you in memory of people who gave their lives. My Uncle Sammy gave his life to fight in World War II. Memorial Day weekend in sports and baseball means you're allowed to look at the Major League standings. There have been some wonderful stories from teams that sucked on Memorial Day. The Houston Astros were 15-30 on Memorial Day, and there they were in the World Series against your Chicago White Sox. White Sox. No, White Sox. The Cubs, they're in second place in the NL Central, 2.5 games behind the Brewers. The White Sox are the worst team in baseball. Congratulations. That's worse than the A's. Team that doesn't want to be in Oakland, doesn't want to go to Sacramento. Oakland doesn't want them. Las Vegas won't pay for them. The White Sox are worse than those A's. And they are the worst team in baseball at a time where you can't even tank right anymore. They can't get anything higher than the 10th overall pick in next year's draft with the worst record in baseball. We're not going to be in the Ohtani Derby. Ha ha ha. You're not going to be in the Derby to get the best pitcher or best hitter either. Ha ha ha, Mr. Chairman, who's insulting his fans. So here's how the White Sox lineup is viewed. Last night, Corbin Burnes gives the Orioles a quality start. 3 earned runs, 6 innings. And the Twitter account of a local sports talk station in Baltimore commented, Corbin Burns, too much meh from him against less than stellar lineups this season. Two-strike pitch to Vaughn changed the game. Got to be better than that. This team needs another frontline starter badly. So that's the barometer of the White Sox. If the White Sox do anything against you, we need to trade you. We need to add to whatever your position is. You get ripped. Chris Getz was talking about trades, conversations, as general manager of the worst team in baseball. Before the regularly scheduled loss last night to the aforementioned Orioles, Tommy Pham's name came up. He has an OPS of 850, even after Colton Cowser made that spectacular leaping catch, take away a homer in the ninth. I mean, 900 OPS is walking with the gods, and Pham has an OPS plus of 140. He's Pham-nominal. See what I did there, Rob?
Yeah.
So conceivably, he would be a wonderful addition to a contender. If you're just looking at that, guy who can hit and play all three outfield positions. Chris Getz was asked about Tommy Pham.
You know, having Tommy around, you know, some of these younger players, or just the team that we have on the field right now, I think, you know, you could go, you know, person to person in the clubhouse, and they would tell you that, you know, they admire the way that he goes about his business. I mean, he hasn't taken a pitch off, both on the defensive and offensive side. He doesn't take anything for granted. He's a guy that's had success in this game and continues to have success, you know, as he's reaching his late 30s. And that's just a testament to his determination. You know, when you're looking at, you know, is he a guy that is going to be with our club for in the future? I think right now we want to take advantage of having Tommy Pham on this roster. You know, when we were able to sign him and insert him in the lineup, it's, you know, he clearly made an immediate impact. So we're going to take advantage of Tommy while he's here. He's a guy that just goes about his business, and we hope that there's an osmosis effect to the rest of the clubhouse based on the performance that he's brought to the team.
Okay, the osmosis effect has not stopped the White Sox from getting the achieving, glorifyingly landing the worst record in baseball. They've been better since Tommy Pham showed up. He's banking, Chris Getz is, and lauding. It sounds like he's trying to gin up leverage for this guy. And I'll tell you why that seems unlikely. Clubhouse leadership from a guy who slapped another player over fantasy football. He slapped Jock Peterson. Pham was with the Reds. Peterson was with the Giants. Over fantasy football, he slapped Jock Peterson and was suspended for 3 games. Okay, I guess leadership is where you find it. But there are questions you need to ask at this point. When you listen to Chris Getz, what he's talking about is how valuable he might be to the locker room. Well, you know what? When they start winning games, when they start moving the pitcher's mound and home plate into the locker room, then you can tell me about how big a guy is and how good he is in the locker room. Since he turned 30, Tommy Pham has played for the Cardinals, the Rays, Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Reds, and now the White Sox. 8 teams, 6 seasons. Never more than 2 since he turned 30. Some guys go downhill after 30. Tommy's been able to hit. He has had some kind of plus war number in 7 of those 8 seasons. All of that, and look what he did. The White Sox are a better team with him than without him. Let's ask this. Why Pham, if he's such a phenomenal hitter, and boy, look at that locker room influence, that osmosis in there about the way he does his job, according to Chris Getz, why wasn't he signed by the White Sox before April 16th? And why wasn't he signed by anybody before Reinsdorf's wretched Sox offered money? Why? Why? There were somebody else on that team you could ask the same question of why. Why would he still be available? the ill-equipped GM and the ill-equipped manager keep talking up Tommy Pham as a pro. And the numbers say that he's doing, his numbers are terrific, are good. Well, they're terrific compared to White Sox, but he was available for everybody. He's available for contenders. He was why? Why did it take till April 16th till he got a job? Everybody needs hitting, right? And he can hit. When this question comes up, when you wonder why it took so long, you have to think there's some kind of risk involved. Risk is a human being. Sports teams have no conscience. Let's first say that. You know, if you can, as long as you're not in leg irons, you can hit a home run, a team will sign you. Yet, no team signed Tommy Pham before April 16th, and that was the White Sox. A lot of teams passed on Mike Clevenger, too. Why? White Sox signed him. Now you're wondering why. Why did you sign him? So, do the teams trust teams trust Tommy Pham's personality? When a guy's been on that many teams in so few years, you go, wait, why does he go from team to team? Everybody asks that, fair or not. There might be other answers. There might be, well, he was a hitter. We have enough hitters. He was an outfielder. We have enough outfielders. Okay. But when Chris Getz starts talking about trying to get value back for what he gives the White Sox, that sounds like somebody who's trying to raise leverage, trying to create a bluff, and Major League Baseball seems to be calling his bluff. Maybe Getz knows you're not going to get much for him. If you get anything at all, maybe word's out on him. Maybe there's enough people who are leery of that guy for whatever reason, the guy who slapped a player on another team and was suspended because he did it over fantasy football. You want a guy to have fire. You don't want a guy who's unhinged. I'm not saying Tommy Pham is. I'm saying that you have to ask these questions when a guy's played for so many teams in those number of years. And nobody's talking about trading for Andrew Benintendi, the worst player in baseball. Baseball Reference WAR of minus 2.0. That's pretty bad. That's awful. Here's what Chris Getz ought to do. Trade Garrett Crochet. Tell the team you have to take Andrew Benintendi and his contract. That's the only way you get Garrett Crochet. I don't know the White Sox are going to contend anytime soon. I think Garrett Crochet will be heading to another surgery because they always do. His trade value might not be any higher now than he is. Do you really think the White Sox are going to contend anytime soon with what you've seen coming up through their minor leagues? Maybe the whole secret is in Birmingham and they're all going to come up here like the Twins did from decades ago and AJ and Kevich and Herbeck, and they're all going to be here and they're all going to be great. Probably not. These are the White Sox. So get something for Crochet. And part of that something is you're going to get rid of Andrew Benintendi, the worst player in baseball. There's your deal. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, there's not enough bad baseball to talk about. So we're going to talk about the Cubs offense, which is the Andrew Benintendi of team offenses. Saturday suckage, so it's appropriate. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome in. Saturday suckage. Welcome in. Welcome back. Stop what you're doing and listen to me. The Score has the only local broadcast of tonight's Cubs game against the Cardinals. Pregame coverage starts at 5:40 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 6:15. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Dudes, I really want to. A baseball team should have a dudes night, right? When we talked to Paul Caputo about the Pensacola dudes from 140 years, the dudes, right?
If you can get the dude actually there too in outfit.
The dude abides. That would be perfect.
Exactly.
The Big Lebowski would be tight. They could own them. You know, they could.
They should hire us. We should plan this all.
And I like the rug really ties the dugout together. That is just so perfect. The dude abides. There are all ways that you can steal that. All right. All of which is much more interesting than the Cubs offense. So the Cubs will play tonight against the Cardinals. They got banged. Game got banged because of weather yesterday. So they'll replay that. They'll play that as part of a doubleheader in July. Oh, boy. Doubleheader in St. Louis in July. Whoo. Good luck to you. The Cubs will go into tonight's game with, as I said, the Andrew Benintendi of team offenses. I don't know if they're flaming out or if they're already out. Last night, Scott Lindholm, Scott from Davenport, tweeted a graphic about something that's perfect for Saturday suckage. It's where the Cubs rank in terms of offensive categories. And it's so simple, even though it's numbers, that even I can understand this. Let me share this with you. In total bases, the Cubs rank 28th out of 30 Major League Baseball teams. They rank 27th in runs and 27th in hits. This was the contact team, remember? Remember, this was the contact team? 27th in hits. They rank 22nd in home runs. They do rank 3rd in walks and 26th in strikeouts. Okay. And they rank 2nd in grounded into double plays. They are the worst team in the majors in batting average. All right, maybe you're going to tell me batting average doesn't matter. But somehow that's part of the slash line, isn't it? Isn't batting average part of the he's slashing whatever? The Cubs are the worst. They're 22nd in on-base percentage. Cubs offense is 28th out of 30 in slugging percentage. They're 7th in stolen bases. I guess that's the walks, because they're not getting many base hits. And they're walking a lot. That must be 7th in stolen bases and not many people are running. And that is where your Cubs offense is. They're slashing 30th, 22nd, and 28th overall in Major League Baseball. That's their offense. And so far, on Memorial Day, they're only 2.5 games back of the Brewers. That is a good place to be when you suck. You are lucky to be there when you suck. And the St. Louis Cardinals suck worse than you, but they're not that far behind you. Understand? You can call this a rivalry. Cubs offense sucks. Cardinals just generally suck. And they're catching you. They're catching up to you. They're objects in mirror may be closer than they appear. All right. They would be encouraged to get a hit. And I'm really worried. Seiya Suzuki is just going to go the way of Kosuke Fukudomi. I thought that last year. He got hurt. He came back better. He got benched. He was better after that. I don't know what it's going to take. But Dansby Swanson, feel free to be Dansby Swanson. They just need a lot more of this. And we hear such great things about all the minor league players who are hitting. And they come up here and they can't hit. I'd like to connect the dots, but there seems to be a great disconnect between what they're training them to do and what they can actually do when everybody's looking, when there's a second deck involved. A lot of people find it easy to play baseball when there's only a single deck of bleachers. When there's a second deck behind home plate and down the baselines, different game. Speaking of a different game, I'm going to take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the game of football. And see how Hub Arkish views the end of the Caleb Williams era because he had a bad offseason team activity practice. I guess it's over. And Tyson Bagent will be your starter. We'll see if that's the way Hub sees it going. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome in. Saturday Suckage.
Welcome in.
Welcome back. Stop what you're doing and listen to me. The Score has the only local broadcast of tonight's Cubs game against the Cardinals. Pregame coverage starts at 5:40 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 6:15. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. Dudes, I really want a baseball team should have a dudes night, right? When we talked to Paul Caputo about the Pensacola Dudes from 140 years, the dudes. Right?
If you can get the dude actually there too in outfit.
The dude abides. That would be perfect.
Exactly.
The Big Lebowski would be tight. They could own him. You know,
they should hire us. We should plan this all.
And I like the rug really ties the dugout together. That is just so perfect. The dude abides. There are all ways that you can steal that. All right. All of which is much more interesting than the Cubs offense. So the Cubs will play tonight against the Cardinals. Game got banged because of weather yesterday, so they'll replay that. They'll play that as part of a doubleheader in July. Oh, boy. Doubleheader in St. Louis in July. Whoo! Good luck to you. The Cubs will go into tonight's game with, as I said, the Andrew Benintendi of team offenses. I don't know if they're flaming out or if they're already out. Last night, Scott Lindholm, Scott from Davenport, tweeted a graphic about something that's perfect for Saturday Suckage. It's where the Cubs rank in terms of offensive categories. And it's so simple, even though it's numbers, that even I can understand this. Let me share this with you. In total bases, the Cubs rank 28th. Out of 30 Major League Baseball teams. They ranked 27th in runs and 27th in hits. This was the contact team, remember? Remember, this was the contact team? 27th in hits. They ranked 22nd in home runs. They do rank 3rd in walks and 26th in strikeouts. Okay. And they rank 2nd and grounded into double plays. They are the worst team in the majors in batting average. All right, maybe you're going to tell me batting average doesn't matter. But somehow that's part of the slash line, isn't it? Isn't batting average part of the he's slashing whatever? The Cubs are the worst. They're 22nd in on-base percentage. Cubs offense is 28th out of 30 in slugging percentage. They're 7th in stolen bases. I guess that's the walks, because they're not getting many base hits. And they're walking a lot. That must be 7th in stolen bases and not many people are running. And that is where your Cubs offense is. They're slashing 30th, 22nd, and 28th overall in Major League Baseball. That's their offense. And so far, Now, Memorial Day, they're only 2.5 games back of the Brewers. That is a good place to be when you suck. You are lucky to be there when you suck. And the St. Louis Cardinals suck worse than you, but they're not that far behind you. Understand? You can call this a rivalry. Cubs offense sucks. Cardinals just generally suck. And they're catching you. They're catching up to you. They're objects in mirror may be closer than they appear. All right. They would be encouraged to get a hit. And I'm really worried. Seiya Suzuki is just going to go the way of Kosuke Fukudomi. I thought that last year. He got hurt. He came back better. He got benched. He was better after that. I don't know what it's going to take. But Dansby Swanson, feel free to be Dansby Swanson. They just need a lot more of this. And we hear such great things about all the minor league players who are hitting. And they come up here and they can't hit. I'd like to connect the dots, but there seems to be a great disconnect between what they're training them to do and what they can actually do when everybody's looking, when there's a second deck involved. I think people find it easy to play baseball when there's only a single deck of bleachers. When there's a second deck behind home plate and down the baselines, different game. Speaking of a different game, I'm going to take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the game of football and see how Hub Arkish views the end of the Caleb Williams era because he had a bad offseason team activity practice. I guess it's over and Tyson Bajan will be your starter. We'll see if that's the way Hub sees it going. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.